I miss a green, for example, I'm already upset. When I find my ball in the bunker, I'm really upset. And when I find my ball in a
fried egg.
The dreaded fried egg.
Fried egg lie, I'm about ready to run off the golf course.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another edition of the Fried Egg Podcast. Tonight, I am joined by Brendan Porath of SB Nation and Sean Martin of the PGA Tour as we get ready for this year's Players Championship. Guys, welcome on.
Thanks for having me.
Andy, thanks for having us on again. I think last time we connected, it was in real life in Augusta, but now we're here. Here we are a month later. With an even bigger event on tap.
Yeah, biggest event in golf, best field in golf, the Players.
Brendan went collared shirt for the pod.
It's just a fluke. I don't know. Walked in and this is what I had on all day. So.
It's been 4 weeks since the Masters. I feel like that part of the schedule just kind of it's a slog. Not a ton of buzz in golf. What have you guys taken away? You've been watching a lot?
No. I think the Masters this is not a complaint about my job. My job is amazing. But the Masters and the weeks leading into the Masters are prepping for a law school final or just the final, a really hard final. It's very enjoyable, that week. But once you're done, you just kind of unplug. You don't think about whatever, all that stuff you were just studying and writing and caring about and reading and watching. And from my perspective, I mean, obviously it's my job. I watch the golf and I follow and know what's going on, but it's just kind of you kind of just decompress and let go. And Satoshi Kodaira, Andrew Landry, and then the Piercy Horschel kind of run didn't exactly do much to kind of pull you back in.
Yeah, I agree. And even with this new team format, I don't know why I can't get into the Zurich, even with the team format. I honestly think that it's because the golf course is so bad.
Wow.
Yeah.
I'm surprised at that take on a Pete Dye course.
I've tried to make that argument. You're like, oh, it's not that bad. I think
it crystallized. I went for a run.
It's a good stretch. It's a good stretch for Dye aficionados with Harbortown, TPC Louisiana, TPC Sawgrass.
I went for a run this afternoon, and I was honestly thinking, I was listening to the No Laying Up podcast, and I heard Tommy Fleetwood refer to a string of PGA Tour events, and he said Riviera. And I thought about it. I go, the really good events we refer to as have a course that's really good, and a lot of times the tournament gets just called the course, Riviera. Yep. Harbortown, and nobody is saying TPC Las Colinas when it was there. Yeah. Or whatever it was. You know, hey, this week's event, the TPC Louisiana. Everyone says this with the Zurich. You know, Colonials the same way.
Colonials, they've always had trouble with that because
I'm curious I need to know where you stand with Pete Dye's catalog right now, because I was very surprised by the tenor of your Black Wolf Run and Whistling Straight tweets this week.
I like Pete Dye. I think Pete Dye was he was so important in architecture, and I think he really gets strategy. But Whistling Straights offended me yesterday. It was so slow. It was unbelievable. And Black Wolf Run, I like Black Wolf Run a lot more. Black Wolf Run's way more natural. I think just the nature of designing this golf course for a resort, and I know that they wanted major championships, but just because you want a major championship, it doesn't mean your golf course needs to be completely unplayable for everybody. David Kidd on my podcast said, Oakmont is the most playable golf course in the world for an 18 handicap. There's no force carries, bogeys are readily available if you want to make bogeys. Like at Whistling Straits, it is so hard for like a regular golfer. It is insane to me. And that's why at a minimum, a good paced round takes 5 hours.
Yeah, I've never played Whistling Straits, but I really don't have any desire to. It just looks so hard.
Could I just say we're really on brand here about 4 minutes into the pod. We're talking about Black Wolf Run, the Players' Championship preview.
Hey, we didn't bring up Jenny.
It's not Giselia and Chris O'Connell coaching Tony Romo. But
we could go back to Jenny Shasirporn and contention at the Women's AM or Women's Open.
Let me just say one more thing. So my buddy set this whole thing up, and I was like, yeah, I'll play. I didn't set this up, but anyways, I was looking at the tee sheet in the morning, but while I was driving up, and I saw 6 hours between our tee times at the two courses, and I was like, "What are we gonna do, Garrett? Get like a big lunch?" Like I was like, and sure enough, we like got off the course, and they're like, "We're gonna be late for our tee time because it took so long to play." Like
that doesn't work. And this was what was it a Sunday?
Sunday afternoon,
morning.
We played at like 9:40 on a Sunday, and it took 5.5 hours. Yes, but whatever.
Scenic.
All right.
Enjoyable.
Moving on to a better. I don't know. It's both are very good championship tests of golf. But getting back to Sawgrass and the last couple of weeks, so we returned to the site of. The big woo-woo, Siwoo Kim's triumph last year. You guys see a repeat happening?
Is Siwoo to you as Hideki is to me? I feel like you're driving the Siwoo bandwagon.
Oh, I love Siwoo. After I watched him last year, I fell in love with like his golf game. I mean, like the guy's 21 years old and he doesn't speak English, and he's won twice, and he was the youngest player ever to get his PGA Tour card. Like, he had to wait to play in events because he was too young to play on the tour. I mean, like...
That gets forgotten.
Yeah.
Especially because it was 5 years ago.
Then he won on the web tour at age 18. He won on the PGA Tour at 19 and 20. Or no. I guess 20
and 21.
20 and 21. So he won on the web when he was 19.
I think I saw Siwoo was like plus 10,000 to win, to repeat. I mean, this is like a really, really hard venue to kind of back it up and get.
No one has ever repeated.
Yeah, not even win, but I'm talking about contend. Sergio seems to be pretty consistent. There are a couple others, but like, it's pretty hard to kind of make noise 2 years in a row, especially after you won. You've got all those obligations, you know, like giving the club to the clubhouse and being kind of the face of the tournament and the ads and signing all the autographs, kissing the babies. I don't know if Siwoo's going to be that kind of brand man this year, but it's hard to repeat. It's hard to even contend in a comeback.
Definitely. He chipped and putted like a demon. I was looking at the stats. He hit 19 greens on the weekend. He made one bogey. He had 49 putts. Like he was getting around from everywhere. It was insane.
It was incredible. I mean, he was so good, but I mean, he's had a good year this year. He's got three top tens already this year.
Yeah, he's turning in the right direction. He's, you know, last year, right before the Players, he'd started working with Sean Foley, and that was the story. Now he's working with Andrew Getson and Josh Gregory. He's got two guys he's working with. And so it seems to be working, though. I mean, before Harbortown, he was second to last this year in strokes gained putting. So the fact that he's even making cuts doing that is pretty incredible. Putting is a little bit.
Say that again. Who's he with?
Andrew Getson, who works with Phil.
Oh, yeah. Okay, gotcha.
And then Josh Gregory.
And Josh Gregory, the performance coach.
Yeah, short game and performance.
Interesting. I didn't know that.
Article on PJTour.com right now. Details, all of that.
Oh. Is that by you?
That is by myself.
Sounds like you're beat. You're all over that.
Him and Phil are trading secrets, you know?
But, I mean, like, given, like, what you're talking about, you said he's had, like, a pretty good year. Comparatively to last year, I mean, he had done very little and was hurt. But like plus 10,000 seems a little out of whack, you know, for the defending champ. You just figure, I mean, I can't imagine there's a ton of public money rushing in on him, but the odds just seemed a little off for a defending champ and a guy who's had a good year.
Sure.
Yeah. I just don't think anybody, is only five. What is it? Five guys, Sean, that have won back. Five that have won twice.
Yeah, and four of them had to wait 10 years or more between wins. Only Steve Elkington was 6 years between wins. I don't know what that means or what that says, but not many guys win twice. When they do, they're pretty far spaced out.
One of those guys is the Big Cat, Tiger Woods. What do you what do you guys expect from him this week?
Oh, is he playing?
I think he'll be okay. Only because he's hitting it well enough. He was top 20 strokes gained off the tee and approached the green last week. He did just putt horribly. It's not a course where he has great memories or great record for. He's won twice, but I mean, for Tiger, that's nothing. So I don't know. We're looking at probably like a 27th place finish.
27. I think that's, yeah. I think he's hitting the ball well, right? I mean, the iron play wasn't horrendous yesterday. I heard Pierre Costas on the broadcast, this is Wells Fargo, say something about like he'd only hit five or six balls inside 10 feet all week. But I mean, I think his strokes gained approach, strokes gained overall tee to green was pretty good. Obviously, his putting was just horrible. Hopefully, they get him running. I would love to see a recreation of that debacle in 2016 when they lost the greens and they were like glass. Kuchar was talking about how they're frictionless. You'd put your putter down and it would slide off.
The Ken Duke round?
Yeah, the Duke round. I'd love to see that because we know Tiger just hates slow greens, can't figure it out. What if they just like tricked him up, made him like glass again for Tiger?
Hideki shot 67 that day. Many people forget.
Yeah, your boy Hideki is about to fall out of the top 10. But hey,
rough times.
You know, Tiger, the thing I think with Tiger is like he's the quintessential, like, hasn't put it all together yet. He's had like tournaments where he's putted it great. He's had tournaments where he's chipped it great. He's had tournaments where he's hit his irons great. And now, like last week was the first tournament where he really drove it well. And when you're coming back from a long layoff, that's what golf is. It takes a lot of time to get everything back and working together at once. Like I think this is all part of not to take the 76ers, the process. We got to trust the process here, and we could be in for a big week. I don't like this course for him, but yeah. I think a big week soon from him where he wins. I mean, he hasn't had a week where he did everything well yet.
It is good for him in that he can hit a lot of two irons. And actually, I pulled up his record. I'm actually surprised. He has 9 top 25s and 17 starts here, 5 top 10. So it's actually a little. But even during his prime years of like, 2000, 2001, he went second and first. But after that, he was a lot of 11s and 12s. And I mean, those were years when he was playing some pretty good golf. So, I mean, it's a solid record there. But for Tiger, anything less than a win is.
It's such a relative scale for a venue he plays like every single year. You expect it to be Doral, Firestone,
right?
Or it's so weird. It's so our kind of frame of reference is so out of whack. Like, oh, he hasn't, doesn't have that great record here because he's only won it twice, and we know he's played it every year on the schedule. It's kind
and
of
don't crazy. Forget the '94 U.S. Amateur either.
Yeah. Why the straw hat?
Why do you guys think he hasn't played as well here as he has at other courses?
I think one reason is just hard to play well here. I mean, you're always one swing away from just ruining your week. That's definitely part of it, I think.
Yeah, I think that's, he did get, he was more wild off the tee, obviously, in that kind of back half of his career.
And it lets more guys into it. So, like, when he won in 2001, right before he finished the Tiger Slam at the Masters, he was playing in the final group with Jerry Kelly. So you're just playing with a strong field at a course that kind of lets anyone who's playing well contend, no matter their playing style. So, like, you have Tiger Woods, you have Jerry Kelly staring Tiger Woods down eye to eye going to the final round. And so I think that too just makes it hard to. There's just so many guys who can win at this golf course. It doesn't really eliminate one style of play. And so that makes it harder to win as well.
Yeah, I completely agree with you, Sean. I think it doesn't really favor one style of play. You look down the list of winners and you got your ball strikers, obviously, with like Sergio Stenson. But then you also have guys like, Siwoo Kim, who won only hitting 19 greens on the weekend because his short game was good and he didn't make any big mistakes. I mean, Poulter, runner up last year. He's not, long. He's a good iron player, a good putter, but you got Jim Furyk has been a runner up here. You got all kinds of different players. I mean, Fred Funk, It's eclectic styles of play.
I love Phil. He won here, and he has three top tens in 24 starts, and he won in 2007. He just switched to Butch, and he's like, you know, I played this really controlled fade. I didn't swing as far back as I normally do. It's really a way I should play more often. And then, of course, that lasted like a week, and then he went back to his old style of play. But it's like this guy has an epiphany to win at a golf course as he plays horribly and just can't stick with it long enough. He finds something new 2 weeks later to work on.
Mm-hmm. Do you think I don't think there hasn't been as many obscure winners, but there was kind of a run where people are like, oh, you know, you get a lot of fluky winners here. Do you think it's because the field is so deep and there aren't any, you know, amateurs or club pros or, you know, older past champions in the field?
The May winners list has been really strong. I think some of the fluky years were the years that, like, the rough got really long in March.
Yeah, I would say, like, since the move to May, it's really been kind of a murderer's row, mostly major champions, I guess, aside from Siwoo, Ricky. But, yeah, I think, like, it's a lot of, like, legit guys who are probably in the top 10 in the world, close to the top 10. You know, Siwoo was the first departure from that run. I think the switch to May, I think, yeah, because it's there are no AMs, club pros, anything like that. The Masters, what I mean, once you make the cut, there's it's not a lot of guys. It's not, you know, you're bound to get four or five at the, you know, inside the top 15 in the world, kind of probably hanging around. It's just a smaller field and easier to get in the mix there. Not easier, but you know what I mean. It's there's less depth. I just think, yeah, you're going to get a guy that maybe the casual fan has never heard of, or certainly in March, you get a Stephen Ames or Fred Funk, players like that, that maybe, you know, are not the big names that the tour is promoting in a featured group nowadays, but it's such a deep field that those guys can come out, and we all as golf nuts who watch this week to week aren't surprised, but maybe if you're just tuning in because you know it's a big event, you might be.
Yeah, I think there were a few years they grew the rough out too thick, but I think March will be good, I think. But there were just a couple years they let it get a little too hairy.
So what will that switch it from Bermuda to, like, Overseas of Rye?
It'll be Overseas, yeah.
What do you think of that, Andy?
I don't think it's that big of a difference. People look into it. They put the grass so much. I really think it's overstated.
Yeah.
In the sense, like, whoever plays well is going to play well. Obviously, like, I think with the greens, it makes a bigger difference, but the greens are still going to be Bermuda. You know, right. Like, Kevin Kisner on Bermuda greens is always, like, a good pick. I think putting on Bermuda is different, but they aren't going to be changing the grass on the greens. It'll be,
no,
you know,
I think Bermuda rough is a challenge for some guys.
It's tricky.
I think anyone can play bent. I think bent is, most guys know how to play that, but Bermuda is definitely tricky mm-hmm. to chip out of.
Do you guys think we'll get a winner inside the top 10 or outside the top 10 this week?
Numbers would say outside.
Yeah.
I'm big on Bryson this week.
I am too. Huge.
Oh my god.
I'm not even messing with you. This isn't even like a joke for Brendan. I'm big on Bryson.
I am too.
This is
a perfect course for him. He can hit those kind of stingers that he likes to hit. Yeah. He's very cerebral. He's playing really well. He made triple on his third hole at Quail Hollow and finished fourth.
He made a double and a triple at Harbortown and finished second.
Yeah, I mean, the guy, well, third, he missed third. But yeah, but like three top fours in his last three starts. And I don't know, it just seems, it's a placement golf course. It's all about, you know, strokes gained, approach the green. It feels very Bryson-y.
I completely agree. I believe he's a guy that's going to play well regularly at difficult golf courses. He hits it really well. Like, if you were going to say there's one weakness in his game, it's, you know, on the and around the greens. I don't like him trying to hit shots with those single length irons around the greens. It's really awkward to watch. But I think this is a place where, you know, he can be so surgical when he's on with, like, where he hits it, and he's got a game plan, he sticks to it, and I think he's a guy that kind of understands how to play proper golf. He's not a bomb and gouger. He kills it though. I mean, he's got all the skills. I think this is the perfect kind of setup for him. Difficult golf courses.
14th in stroke gain off the tee, 17th in stroke gain approach the green. Might as well just book it, to be honest. This is Bryson's week.
Winning score looks like less, I don't know, since May, it's always kind of around just in double figures, 12, 13 under. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Yeah, I mean, that's interesting. The point, I was going to make a point that, like, once he gets the big number, he just becomes like this, you know, freak and checks out or, you know, freaks out about it. But, you know, he's talking about the doubles and triples and Quail and Harbortown and still kind of clawing his way back. That kind of runs against my, you know, supposition that he doesn't handle the big numbers all that well because it throws off the calculation.
So as
well, let's hear it. You're the one guy who's not on the Bryson train. What's your take?
I haven't considered him yet. I mean, I think he's playing extremely well, but yeah, this is music to my ears. I'm going to have to dive into this more. I'm all about it. It makes sense that, you know, he's a rookie though, right? It's his first run, first try.
He's a rookie nowhere. He's played this round more times than anybody in the field.
he did play Augusta like 45 times before he played it as an AM. Had more practice than like speed. I think he's a rookie. That would give me pause, but I love the pick. When you're talking about positional golf and kind of playing that approach shot game, that's his specialty. I love it.
So
plays well at Harbortown, high correlation to TPC Sawgrass.
Yeah.
You got all here.
Top fives 2 out of 3 years at Harbortown. You know, yeah. as a rookie and this year. So what outside of Bryson, you know, we're at the kind of halfway-ish mark of the 2018 calendar season. Who has really impressed you? That you kind of didn't see coming this year on the tour?
I'm going to say, this is going to sound obvious, but hear me out. I'm going to say Patrick Reed, and not that he came out of nowhere to win the Masters, but he's got 5 straight top 10s now in the midst of, you know, wins the Masters in the midst of that. You know, obviously a lot came out after the Masters about the family situation, and, you know, he's gotten some blowback about wearing the green jacket all over the place, which is ridiculous that people criticize him for that, but
that is dumb. I don't really understand that. And I'm not a huge Reed fan, but like, I don't understand that. Why that's just like the Reed kind of stigma. Why people are mad about that? Because Phil, a lot of guys, people were actually mad about that. I think it was mostly that Rockets game. He was in his green jacket, which, you know, that was whatever, a week, 2 weeks after it happened. And I think there was like a lot of like NBA fans who just don't understand, or casual sports fans who don't follow golf that understand like the Masters winner wears his green jacket everywhere for a year.
Yeah, but I think Kyle Porter does a good job of putting kind of careers and trajectories in perspective. And we're looking at a guy who's 27. He has 6 tour wins, a major. He's playing really good golf right now. I just think that, you know, he went through some equipment struggles last year, and you go back to the PGA, he's finished second and first in the last 2 majors. You know, he got his equipment struggles sorted out.
What about the vision thing?
Yeah, that was, and then he,
yeah, that was crazy.
Contacts thing on us. That was vision straight down. He's got the clubs he likes, and he's on a tear.
And he's in the top 10. He's closing in on his top 5.
I don't understand why any of these guys wear contacts. They just get lazy. I don't even understand it.
If
Harman had his wife run contacts, or somebody run a contacts out to him in the middle of the round at Quail Hollow.
One slip of the laser and you're out. You're retired.
Then you're getting the Anthony Kim insurance money.
Right. Exactly.
Patrick Reed's got a better career than Ricky Fowler. Like,
yeah.
He hasn't been as consistent as Fowler, but it's such an interesting debate. Do you favor wins or do you favor the consistency? Ricky's been more consistent in his career, but Reed's got more wins in a major now. Like, what do you think, Sean? Or does Ricky have a major?
I think he gets one eventually. But yeah, I think Reed, he goes through consistent stretches. He's definitely more inconsistent than Ricky. But I mean, even like right now, I mean, I don't know. I think that I'm curious to see how long this run of top tens and playing really well runs out, because it seems like it could, you know, most guys would play the Masters, they'd come back and, you know, they wouldn't play good. They've been off, you know, enjoying the spoils of the victory. But he comes back and he plays well at Zurich with Cantlay, and then he finishes eighth at Wells Fargo. So the guy, like, doesn't even give himself a chance to rest. You know, Sergio had kind of an off year for the most of the year after winning the Masters. Patrick Reed just comes right back in and starts kicking in teeth again.
He plays, like, 35 times a year, too. Maybe he won't this year, but he it's crazy how much he plays. He
just loves golf, man.
So what? How do you think that translates to this week? The way, I mean, he's obviously in form.
Well, he's not a good, I mean, he's not the kind of guy, you know, he's not, iron play is not his strength. He's a guy who grinds, chips and putts well.
This was pre-helicopter finish.
That's true. I love the story behind the helicopter finish. Apparently his swing coach told him he was trying to hit a fade and he couldn't do it. And he's like, look, do whatever you have to do to hit a fade for me. And so he makes that swing and he's like, all right, do that in tournaments now. And he's like, no, he's like, there's no way. He had to be talked into bringing the helicopter finish out into public because he was too, he's a little ashamed of it, I guess, but it obviously works.
What about Brendan? Who have you been impressed by?
I kind of like Luke List. You know, I've loved what he's done this season. If you're talking about a guy's maybe not won or maybe not as high profile as some of the guys at the very top of the world rankings, I think it's been cool to watch him. He's been kind of, you know, he was an elite ant, like a high ranked prospect and all that. And then, you know, wandered a bit in the wilderness and takes kind of a totally different approach, lives out in LA. Right. I think he's been cool to watch and follow, whether it was the Honda or WGCs sneaking in there. But yeah, first half of the season, I've enjoyed watching him. He's like, I don't know why we frame everything in like Ryder Cup talk, but it's kind of a measuring stick. He's in the top 15 in the standings. I mean, it should tell you enough that he's what kind of form he's had over the last, you know, year, certainly this season.
I feel like List is one of those guys, and I think we've lost this a little bit with the generation of young players, but like when you look at a guy and how he's progressed from year to year, like he's gotten like a lot better as a player every year, more consistent. You see him on more and more leaderboards, like especially the last 3 years. And then this year, I mean, he's so close to winning for the first time. And I mean, he's 32, I think. So not a young guy, but absolutely mashes the ball. But he's one of the rare guys that you really, you know, this used to be you used to see this all the time where guys would progress year after year after year and then finally break through in their early 30s versus now today we're so conditioned for the early 20s win.
Sure. Yeah, it's, and I've been like digging into NCAA a little bit even more. It's just crazy how fast and how competitive those guys, how just deep it is, how many of these young guys are going to start winning. It's only going to get even more intense, I think. Just these 20-year-olds and contending and, you know, whoever it is, Braden Thornberry, now it's Sam Burns, players like that just kind of popping up on leaderboards over and over and over again.
Yeah, I mean, it used to be just getting your card at 24 was a big deal.
Right.
Now it's like, well, it's great to get your card, but you haven't won yet. So it's like, eh.
Yeah. Impressed with Jason Day.
Yeah.
Coming back. 2 wins. He's so good. The thing that you wonder about is like the putter. Everybody's like, oh, you know, like he had that historically great putting stretch when he went on that run in 2016. And then, you know, he hasn't missed inside 5 feet all year this year. I mean, I think he's just like a really good putter. I had a buddy who's good friend who I wouldn't call him a buddy. He's an acquaintance, you know.
I hope he's not listening.
Yeah, I don't know if he listens. He probably isn't. He caddied at Vintage Club, which is where Day practiced. And he said that Day, like, you know how Day said he, like, took the whole, he hadn't played golf in, like, 4 months or whatever that one.
Right.
Year? Well, he's like, yeah, that he hadn't played, but he spent, like, 7 hours a day on the practice green, you know, and chipping. So like that, I mean, like, I think that's where he works and spends so much time. Like, he's got that unreal distance. So he's got an elite skill with the driver and then around the greens and on the greens. I think his short game is underrated how good it is.
It's so good.
No buddy of his is Tiger Woods. Text him for a big game, for a big round.
Really?
For a big event. He always gets a text from Tiger, and you hear about it every time.
Hadn't heard that. It's pretty cool. It's nice of Tiger. And it's pretty neat that Jason Day is buddies with him.
Jason Day, he hit 41 greens last week out of 72.
Huh. Short game, huh?
Short game.
He's 169th this season in strokes gained approach, and he's won twice and hasn't finished outside the top 25 in a stroke event.
So, Sean, how do you like him this week?
I don't.
Oh. Why?
You got to hit the irons well. I think I looked it up. 10 of the last 14 players winners were in the top 10 of strokes gained approach for the week. Only one of those 14 was outside the top 20. You got to hit your irons well here. Can't be grinding all day.
Do you think Hideki's going to break out of his slump this week?
I'm worried, man. It's not good.
Is he hurt? Is he still injured? What's the problem? Figuring it out?
Yeah, I try to get a little inside info from Bob whenever I see him. And, you know, he played pretty bad the first round at Wells Fargo.
Bob, do people know who Bob is? Who's the listeners?
Bob? Yeah. Sorry, Bob Turner, Hideki's translator.
I don't know who Bob is.
Oh, yeah, Bob Turner.
Bob
Vance. All
right.
You know, he shot on first round 77. He said just a couple bad breaks, led to some big numbers. Shot 68 in the second round, but then he MDF'd at Quail, you know, where he should play well. He played with JT PGA on Sunday. I don't know, man. I think he took the PGA loss kind of hard, and you know, then I don't know if the wrist injury is still a thing. I don't know. I need to get deeper into this, but
Do you think he feels any pressure from the rise of Satoshi?
I'm trying to look. The PGA is his last top 10 in a full field event in the United States.
That was a pretty it's quite a non sequitur diversion from Andy's. Andy's inquiry about Satoshi.
I think he welcomes the chance to have another countryman on the President's Cup team here.
Yeah.
I'm wondering when the question's going to shift from can Hideki win to can Satoshi win. How far away are we from that?
I don't know. How's he followed it up? Has he played since Valero?
I think it's his first start as a full member of the PGA Tour this week.
Saving it for the home of the tour.
He's just a die guy now. Only plays dies from now on.
I think Satoshi can play. Like, really.
Oh, yeah.
You remember when he played in Japan? He finished T32 at the Crowns 2 weeks after Heritage. He can play.
He had a lot of distractions that week. You know?
Wai Yang was your champion by four.
Wow. That is. You see, now, Brendan, we have diverted. This is a true diversion.
The Crowns. I love the Crowds talking about.
So
if you look at some of those like Japanese tour and Asian tour leaderboards and like results, it's like a treasure trove.
Oh,
amazing.
Yeah.
Like blast from the past. All right,
welcome to my Monday.
God.
So who's disappointed you guys this year? Likewise, the same question. Hideki?
Besides Hideki? Well, yeah, that's an obvious answer, but definitely Hideki. I hope he's not listening.
Sergio? I don't know. I expected a little bit more from Sergio. He's been, you know, he's throwing his clubs in the woods, you know, but whatever. He's married, having kids. I know how that goes when you have a newborn, kind of eject from the rest of the world, the rest of your life. You got to get your house in order and kind of hang out with your family. But I don't know. I just thought Sergio kind of, when he cracked the code of finally getting a major, would, I don't know, be more regularly in contention. But also it's understandable that once you crack the code to a major, you kind of hang out and maybe regress a little bit. We've seen Bubba do that. I don't know. It's not necessarily unexpected, but I thought he would be doing more and doing more with more consistency.
Adam Scott's definitely in some trouble as well.
He's in trouble.
Working with GG Swing Tips. You know, I'm really disappointed in Ted Potter. I mean, the guy has missed five straight cuts after he won. I'm just joking. I would say that I'm a little bit disappointed in Matt Fitzpatrick. You know, he hasn't gotten off to a start. I'm waiting. You know, he's won every year of his pro career. I'm waiting for him to break out, and you know, it's still early in the season. He could get hot, and I feel like this could be a good venue for him. He just hasn't been playing very well.
You think Hazeltine? He still has a Hazeltine hangover. He's still scarred.
Man,
no.
It was interesting to observe him that week. He was kind of like, he was like a fan, just along for the ride.
Well, didn't he sit out the entire first day?
Yeah. I mean, if it wasn't the first day, I think it was. He sat out a lot, and then
him and Chris Wood, right?
Yeah. Then when he did play, he got smoked.
I hate to be so America centric, but I would, for me with Fitzpatrick, like I need to see it in America a little bit. It's a huge disparity between his results in Europe and his results in America.
Well, you know, he's a legend at Northwestern. He did it in America there.
He was there for 10 weeks.
He won a USAM. He's done plenty in America. That's not played overseas, Sean.
At an architecturally significant course like Brookline over Corey Connors.
Yeah.
Right. That's right.
So who you got this week? Who would you pick? It's always a crapshoot. I feel like...
So outside Bryson, I'm all in on Bryson. I'm not even kidding. But outside of that is Henrik. He's like the one guy who has a consistently good record at TPC Sawgrass.
What about Big Leash?
Mm.
You took my guy. Stenson was the guy I was going to say.
You can have him. I'm firmly planted in Bryson land. You can have
Stenson. What's happened to Noren? How's he doing? He kind of fell off, right? He was not good at the Masters. I know that.
Just the cut of Quail, but I mean, he hits that low bullet fade. I don't think that Quail setup is not a good match for him. He played well at last year's Players. I want to say he was involved late Sunday, but at last year's Players.
Last year he finished 10th. So yeah, I mean, that's that could be a good pick. I think Paul Casey.
Good pick.
He doubled the first hole Sunday.
He's such a stud. I mean, finally got that win. Like, this guy, like, listen to this. So, let's see. Starting this year, Abu Dhabi, he finished T9th, T8th, T49th, T12th, 1st, 17th, 15th, MC, 5th. Like, that's, you know, I feel like he's like the most consistent player on tour.
I think he really is.
That's why he's number one in the Sagarin rankings.
Do you think the Sagarin rankings are a better ranking than the World Golf rankings?
I think the Sagarin slightly undervalue victories, but I definitely give them some weight. I mean, I think when you had Paul Casey at number one over Justin Thomas, that was a little tough to swallow, but. I think they're good. I think they definitely deserve some weight.
What about Bo Hostler? Looking at some of the rookies. No.
My big value pick, Francesco Molinari.
Yeah.
Top 10s the last 3 years. Guy just hits it dead straight. He'll never see a hazard.
He just like never wins. I feel like he contends in the sense of like he finishes high, but he's never threatening. Like, you're never worried about him winning.
He's the king of, he pops up Saturday, you know, he tees off Saturday an hour ahead of the leaders, makes two birdies in the first hole, all of a sudden he's in fifth place, and you're like, oh shoot, Francesco's in the field this week, I forgot to pick him. That's my weekly Francesco Molinari experience.
Is he going to be on the Ryder Cup team?
I don't think so.
I don't think so.
He's 30th in the world. He's definitely got I'm sure he's getting a look.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's going to be guys who win. You know, I don't know. I don't think you can do it.
I think Bryson's going to torch Paris. It's going to be great.
I wish Paul Dunn was in the field. Why don't they, you know, extend some invitation to some Europeans playing well?
You can get in by being top 50 in the world ranking.
But
it sounds just like the PGA Tour to do that.
Sorry, there weren't any world ranking points at the event with the dancing six mascot.
Wait. Are we going to talk about? We're talking about the Players. I don't think the Players should point its guns at anything else for having a bunch of contrivances around the golf part of the event. Right.
We're getting off topic. I'm not a big mascot guy.
We gotta stay on brand, Brendan.
All right. Speaking of like the Euro Tour, kind of they've really gotten past. There was like that moment there where like the top Euro guys were like, the hell with this. You remember that? Like 2011, Rory just skipped it. He's like the supernova superstar. Just decided not to play because he had like the Volvo match play in Spain the next week. And Lee Westwood, your old friend, number one in the world at the time, just took a pass. Like, it was interesting. Like that whole like tension and dynamics pretty much faded and gone away. And the players is ascended. And it's not really a question. If you're top 50, you really play. But that was always like an interesting time. Imagine like Rory just saying, nah, not going to play it.
I wonder what would happen if the Euro Tour moved one of its like Rolex series events opposite the players.
I don't think they would do much, except for maybe those guys in like the 30 to 50 range of the world rankings who are also on the Euro Tour.
Yeah, which, like Fitzpatrick, Molinari,
Alex Levy or something like that, you know.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that was
on a great run. Sorry, I'm just saying Paul Dunn is on a great run, by the way. I feel I want to rescind. I want to take back my take, and I feel like I disrespected Paul Dunn.
You're a big man for rescinding and taking back a bad take, because that was fifth, unnecessary.
Fifth in Punta Cana. I love that he went to Punta Cana, even though, you know, there's WGC that week. I give him credit for going to an opposite field event. T8 in Houston, second in the Spanish Open, miscut, and then seventh in Volvo China Open, and then, of course, wins. Sixes.
I mean, Danny Willett's in the field. Give him Willett's spot.
Wow, I didn't know that. He's playing?
Yeah. He's teeing up at 8-16 with Gribble and Hoffman.
Hmm.
What do you guys think about those pairings that the tour rolled out? You know, you were being... was it Sean or you that was being critical of the Masters pairings?
I don't recall that. I don't recall that. The Masters? I'm not critical of the Masters. Parents, I don't think. They don't give you this, though. They always make sure they put, like, they will never give you, like, two of the top five, six, seven names in the same group. They always give you kind of a, you know, they throw an international guy, like, maybe an amateur. Like, they never do these, like, power trios like we're getting this week.
The Masters is always big on like the two thirds of a group. You get one name, like, oh, like, gosh, we're like one name away from just a supernova of a group.
But even that second name is like not, you know, it's like column B kind of name. It's a great name for like golf nerds like us. Like, it's wow, that's awesome. But like, it's still not the top. It's not like there's like a column A that's like 10 guys. And none of them are in the same three. So.
Isn't that kind of better though? Because
yeah,
then they can shoot away from the, you know, that group occasionally. Like, I feel like when you get these super groups, it's all you see. You don't see anything else.
Yeah. What do you think about the Sunday kind of rollout of these super groups? They just said these guys are playing together. We don't have a time yet, but they're playing together.
I love the fact that the only time Tiger and Phil have played at TPC Sawgrass was the Better Than Most round.
Yeah,
which outside of Better Than Most, like, you got to remember, like, 2001 players, like, Tiger is on the verge of completing the Tiger Slam. It's like peak Tiger. He on 11, the par five, he flags some long iron to like a foot, makes eagle. He fist pumps on 16 after making this long birdie putt, and then on 17 he makes the Better Than Most putt. Like, the context gets lost. And not to insert myself into this, but I asked Phil on Sunday, like, what do you remember about that round? And he just got like stone faced, and he's like, all I remember is that was a tough time for me playing against him. it was like bringing back bad memories of just getting kicked in the face by Tiger. 2000, 2001.
Well, I mean, and it's whatever. This is like the talking point that the tour wants you to hit on because of this. Is like, but it does speak to the depth of where, like, of the fields right now, that we can split them on the same side of the draw and in the same group because you have a Rory, Spieth, JT kind of trio to carry the other half of the draw. Like, I know that's probably exactly the talking point they want me to say. But it does speak to the depth.
I mean, also there's like Poulter, Rose, Fleetwood, Watson, Johnson, Koepka.
Yeah.
You know, like,
crazy.
Yeah, it's not like that are the only ones. There's in the afternoon. Right. Yeah, there's Reed, Rahm, Matsuyama, Day.
Dribble, Willett, Hoffman.
Yeah, Day, Stenson, Garcia. You know, like, that's nuts. I guess the pairings, like, if you have all 50 of the top 50 like we do this week in a field, sure, you can get pretty good, because I feel like the rankings go about 15 deep now.
Yeah. So, right before this, I was watching Golf Channel. It's a network on cable television. And they were saying, Brandel Chambly was saying, this is like the toughest test in all of golf. It's what the U.S. Open used to be. It's the most like pure test. It, you know, and then Duval kind of joined him and saying, like, you have to hit every club in the bag. You have to hit the shots both ways, like in consecutive holes. What do you think of that, Andy? This is like, I don't know if toughest test was the word he used, because that's like the tagline for the U.S. Open, but like, it's a test of what the U.S. Open used to be.
Yeah, I think it's a fair test. It's not it's not overly penal. Like, it, you have space to hit it. It doesn't favor one skill. Like, I mean, I think the U.S. Open, everybody talks about with 20-yard wide fairways and 8-inch rough that, you know, there seems to be a growing contingent of people that want, like, that dictates who wins. Like, a long hitter who hits it, drives it well that week is going to win, because if you have that really long rough, like, and a shorter hitter, let's just say like Tim Clark a couple years ago, who won the Players, would have no chance at a U.S. Open, because everybody's going to miss a fairway when it's 20 yards wide, and the shorter guys are going to be hitting 4-iron, and the long guys are hitting 8-iron and 9-iron. Like, that's so much different out of really thick rough, hitting a 4-iron than an 8-iron or a 9-iron. The Players, like, the average fairway width has got to be probably about 33 to 40 yards wide. There's some really wide fairways. It requires you to move the ball. Like, you know, there are holes that it's a fade is preferred, a draw is preferred, but there's always width, and there's always, you know, you could, the one thing I think that has been lost because of technology, the ball, and how far these guys are hitting it today, is that it doesn't require as many drivers as it used to. So it's not as much of a driving exhibition. And I think Brandel's kind of talking out of both sides of his mouth, in the sense that he wants the U.S. Open long and narrow, because he says that a driver is the greatest skill, and hitting it long and straight is the greatest skill in the game. Like, Dustin Johnson might only hit like 3 drivers around this course.
Yeah. You need 8,000-yard golf courses.
Yeah. I side with my man Bill Corr, who says build them shorter and wider.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not the architecture expert that you are, but I do love, as like a fan and a consumer, I love watching these guys having to hit the ball right to left, left to right, kind of hit a drive that's a draw, and then have to hit an approach shot that's a cut or something. Like, I, as a consumer, I love seeing that having to be done. I wish, like you said, there were a few more driver holes, I guess. But yeah, I love that as a consumer.
Yeah, I mean, the other thing about the Players and Sawgrass is like the ideal angles, like the strategy makes sense everywhere. Like, if you play close to the hazards, you get the better angle, and then every, you know, yard off that line, you get a little bit worse angle, and it just like it, you know, Dye has like an innate ability, just like kind of like the flag hangs out there, and it plays with these, you know, the world's best players' ego. Like, you know, you sit and look at it, and you, these guys know they can hit these shots, and if you don't pull it off, you end up making a double. But if you do, like, if you chicken out, though, like, if you play away from the flags, you end up with really tough two putts, and the angles of the greens where you can have, like, if you miss pin high and you aim 10 yards right, you might be down in a swale runoff area, whereas a lot of courses, like the surrounds of the greens, are really benign and pretty boring. Like, you know, like one that jumps to my mind is like Memorial is there's so much thick rough around the greens that the ball just stops if you miss the green. So you're only going to end up like a couple yards off the green versus Sawgrass. You know, they have those runoff areas where the ball runs away and gets further away when you miss hit when you miss a target or a shot.
It's by far the best Florida course on tour, not like, you know, Florida course overall, but of the four on tour, was it four now? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think anything is even in the conversation of being close to as good of a tournament course. It's, I mean, when you think back to like when it was designed, I mean, the players' uproar was unbelievable. I think, unfortunately, the course has been tinkered with so much since its original design. Like the 12th hole, the redesign of that, like last year, that was awful. I don't care what anybody says, like the spin of it being like great hole. Like you don't redesign a hole 1 year after you redesign it. If it was really good, it was not a good golf hole. And to me, like, I think that's an example of somebody trying to force a hole design. We have to have a short par four, so we're just going to jam this in here because like everybody loves short par four, so we have to do it. And it doesn't fit with the flow of the golf course, in my opinion. But that being said, we'll see what it is like this year. I heard they softened some slopes, but at the end of the day, I and no disrespect to Steve Wensloff, but you're talking about Steve Wensloff designing a hole versus, you know, Pete Dye, who is the greatest architect of his generation. When you walk onto a hole and say, this doesn't belong. And that's kind of the feel of that hole along, you know, and just how the golf course has gotten commercialized and a lot more neat over the years. I think Jeff Ogilvie talked about it a ton on the podcast. So, sorry, I'm rambling now.
No, I'm loving this. Keep going. What did Ogilvie say?
I asked him if he could redesign one golf course, you know, what would it be? He said TPC Sawgrass on the podcast. Right. And he was like, you know, that golf course could look like that scruffy Pine Valley look that you see with the sandy soil. And if you look at the original pictures from when it opened, that's what it looked like. It was really scruffy and it was a little bit more unkept.
The old photos are amazing.
Yeah, I've seen like
goats. They had goats eating the grass and they were on the roof of the clubhouse. And like, I mean, it was a jungle. The place was insane.
So what did they do to 12 for this year? What did they do?
So they extended the bunker on the left. So now that bunker, it used to really only come into play on the layup. I think if you pull one short of the green a little bit, it'll catch bunker instead of water. And then they flattened apparently the approach right in front of the green. That sloped to the left also. So if you hit that, it could roll in the water. Now that approach is flat. So if you hit it, you know, straight or with a cut and it lands on that approach, it won't bounce as hard left.
So they did things to make guys hit more drivers? Is that what I'm hearing or no?
They're just kind of trying to get away from that, having it land on the green or near the green and roll off into the water.
Okay.
They listened to player feedback and then decided to make changes that fit the player feedback, which I would liken to allowing the inmates of a prison to say, hey, this is how we would like the prison run, and we're going to run the prison this way.
It's the players' championship at the players' tournament course and the players' tour. Like, so I guess that's kind of what they get to do.
If something's deemed unfair, it will be changed. But I think we'll see what it's like. I don't know. The amazing thing is Golf Digest gave it the redesign of the year. And then the next year, that redesign is being redesigned again.
Now we are in the meat and potatoes of this podcast. I kind of enjoyed the main course here.
I realized there was a redesign of the year award.
Yeah, they won the redesign of the year to the TPC Sawgrass. And it was announced, and then shortly after, it was announced that the 12th hole was being redesigned again.
Is there a restoration of the year?
Yeah, I think there's a restoration of the year. I'm not sure. I can't remember who won the other awards. That's the only one that really stuck out in my mind.
Gotcha.
So it's The I like that. Yeah, I mean, it's you, crown Sawgrass. You know, all the golf courses in the world that did redesigns, and one did a one hole redesign that was changed over, and they won redesign of the year.
There were some other changes. I mean, they were minor, but there were some other changes.
Yeah, they had that back tee on, 15?
15, and they took out that mound between 6 and 7, which is pretty cool. But, yeah, I mean, they cleaned up some... The big thing was they cleaned up some areas, which just gets, you know, Bermuda courses get kind of shaggy and lose their angles, and they just kind of brought back some of that die geometry, I guess. Just kind of sharpened up some of those angles.
I love, you know, this is the perfect example of, like, having a regular course as the championship course. It's just like the Masters. Like, everybody knows the finish, 16, 17, 18. And that's, like, why the Players' Championship is must-watch TV on Sunday.
Yep. That's what I was going to go into kind of from the consumer perspective, not necessarily the guy who's maybe picking up on all the architectural subtleties like you. It is like you can bank on it. You know the course. You know those holes. You know the top 50 in the world are going to be there. That's the thing that kind of bugs me about this. So the Players a little bit is like, I use this analogy off, you know, on some text with some friends last night. It's like a cook who's got like this perfect, like a great, like piece of meat, like a great steak or something. Great piece of meat. You got the top 50 in the world, insane field, best field of the year on a recognizable course that like fans know, and whether they love or hate, they know it and they have history with it. But then like you just like the tour just does things. They've got this piece of meat and they just start throwing all these crazy spices that don't go together and overseason the hell out of it. And like it dominates the taste. Like you just have all these things around it that on the ground. And I wrote this last year. Like it's awesome. It's like a really fun party. It's a totally different vibe from the Masters. Obviously, everything is a different vibe from the Masters. But and it's cool. They embrace that. Like I enjoy the party atmosphere and like the kind of this is like a festival. Let's have fun. And there's also golf happening. But like from afar, as someone like watching on TV and taking it in, it's like there's just a little too much. Like they have a great product here, a good piece of meat. They don't need to kind of throw everything on it and dominate the taste of what should be an event with all the best in the world, the biggest purse, and on a course that's recognizable and we have history with.
I would agree with that. It kind of ties back into our original discussion about Whistling Straits. Beautiful piece of land, and they just did way too much to it. You know, it's the same thing. I think just like if you just allow the tournament to speak for itself, it would have like right. ascended into its spot as considered a major, like a fifth major. But trying to force something in, it's like trying to convince somebody. If you tell somebody that my idea is the greatest idea in the world, they probably are going to have more restraint and opposition towards your idea. But if you convince somebody to think that it's their idea, that it's the, you know, the fifth major, they're probably going to run with it and bang that drum, you know, and other people are going to follow them because it wasn't their idea, you know, but by forcing, you know, the idea down people's throats, it kind of backfired on them.
So I will I will vouch for like the experience on the ground. I think it's great. I loved it. And I would encourage everyone to go. And I think like them trying to do all sorts of different stuff from the food trucks to whatever activation here or there is fine. Like I'm fine with that. And they want to make it as different an experience for the widest, you know, net of people there. That's fine. But I just think like the presentation from afar, watching on TV, watching on the internet and consuming it, like the stuff on the internet just gets like a little bit too much. It's a great product. Let it speak for itself.
I'm kind of sad that there's no blog cabin this year. I was thinking this time last year we were playing the ZV shootout.
the Oak Ridge shootout.
Yeah.
And not to also like, you know, speak up for the tour again here, but like, I don't know that they like are really jamming the fifth major thing down our throats. I think it's more like that's like what Golf Channel needs to have a panel on that. And the writers need to have a panel about it. Is it a fifth major? Is it not a fifth? I don't know that, like, I think there was probably an era when the tour wanted to like jam it in there as a fifth major. But I think like now they're like, that's just like a media debate that exists.
It's interesting going back and reading old players' stories from like 82, and like there were columns all the time. I don't even know who brought it up. If it was writers, or I think it was more writers and players. It was like, but that was a talking point back in like 82. It's like when I saw that Alistair McKenzie was saying the ball was going too far, and I'm like, man, we really just have the same arguments over and over again, no matter what they're about. But I think it was just a thing that people were considering it, you know, when it went to Sawgrass or to TPC Sawgrass, and then they decided that there should be four and not five. But I think it was just something that was people were considering as the players kind of grew in prestige, I guess.
I don't know.
Yeah. All right. Everybody make their picks. Then we'll get out of here on some overrated, underrated.
Go ahead.
You got, wait, who'd you pick again?
DeChambeau, all the way to the bank.
You're taking him to win.
Wow.
I'm all in. I might wear a Hogan cap for the course.
Oh, man. A Puma, Hogan cap?
I think now I'm going to go Wednesday to the first-timers presser and try to get just deep in his process. I just want to hear what he did to prepare for this test.
That would be good. Instead of your
phone, you should take your laptop out on the course. Just pretend like you're punching in data. Like, do that little one-arm hold like you're a server carrying a tray. Just type it in numbers, following them in.
That
like
probably would intrigue him.
Charts. Oh yeah, make it a surface. You know, make it so it's all.
Make it like
on brand.
Hey, and
get some AR on the course.
And Sean,
reality.
Make it seem like it's his idea to come up and talk to you. You know.
I like Stenson. Sean stole my thunder there a little earlier. I think, you know, it's obviously one here that was before he kind of ejected from pro golf there for about a year. But yeah, I love Stenson. You know, he's taken the whole month off since the Masters, but played the Florida Swain well, played Houston well, played the Masters well for a guy who'd never really played the Masters all that well. So I like Stenson with his course history here and, you know, his form.
I love how Stenson sets his schedule and is so, like, you know, he doesn't care about skipping a WGC event, you know? No. If he wants a month off, he takes a month off, you know?
Yeah.
It's, yep. I got Casey. I forgot we even talked about all these already. all right, so...
Is Stenson a Hall of Famer?
Yeah. Yeah,
I like it.
Yeah, he's definitely
FedEx Cup,
like gold medal or silver medal.
Historic Open, like I mean, I think like the way that Open went down too. I know that they don't really look at it that way, probably, but yeah, the way he won the Open, a FedEx Cup, the Players.
He's almost got 20 worldwide wins.
Race to Dubai Championship or whatever they call it. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I'm in favor. I just was curious for other people's opinions.
I'd be interested to, you know, that he's an interesting guy because he's one of those guys that lost his game like twice.
Yep.
You know?
Yep.
Where he fell off you know, Westwood lost his game too. He could be coming back from his second time losing his game.
I follow Westy on Instagram and it's just, it's him in the gym and then it's him having a cocktail. And there's not very much golf sprinkled in between, which is fine. I mean, live your life. I'm not being critical, but it's just always him in the gym and then him having a cocktail.
I know, or eating something.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
It's like he's a big foodie, loves a cocktail, then he gets to the gym the next morning. You know, he doesn't need to work on the gym. He hits the ball good regardless.
Yeah.
So
it's a shame he's not there this week.
All right, overrated, underrated, 16 through 18.
God, it's hard to say it's underrated for, because, I mean, Lord, the Islet Hall. But I think it's underrated. I love it. I mean, I think because I think because all the shine and run and publicity goes to 17, you kind of lose 16 and 18. Like, we don't. We know what they're all about. But you have a par 5, a par 3, and a really tough par 4. I think it's underrated. I think it's awesome. It's an incredible finishing stretch. And, like, the Island Hole is just a piece of that. You know, I think 16 is such a fun hole to watch. You can make an eagle if you get, you know, you pull something crazy off on your second shot. And 18, I think, makes you hit two great shots to make a par. I love it.
I'm going to agree with Brendan. I think, too, in talking to guys about March, one of the cool things is the wind actually shifts a lot more in March. And so you'll get days where 17 is going to be into the wind, which those were the days when it was like carnage. I wrote my big story for the week on 98 and Len Matisse, and like that kind of finish is only possible this week. So I'm going to go underrated.
Yeah, I'm going underrated too. 17 is overrated, but sure. 16 and 18. What I like about it is you can make birdie, and in the case of 16, eagle on either hole, but you could also make like a double, triple, or, you know, we've seen 10s on number 17. So I would say I'd say it's underrated. I think 18's a really good hole too. I know it's distance. That's another one where distance has kind of hurt it a little bit, but
yeah,
that's a good golf hole. All right. So how about Xander Schauffele? He's ranked 25th in the world, or 29th. Is he underrated? Overrated?
Whew. Go ahead, Sean.
I'm going to say overrated. I think, you know, when you get on heaters and everything seems to be going right, it's really easy. And I think that I am surprised by what's happened. I think when he started the year with like a third in Malaysia, you know, it just showed that he was going to keep rolling. And he's been pretty consistent. Like, he's only missed one cut this year. He's got a couple top tens. Finished 9th at Riviera, which shows he can play architecturally significant golf courses. But I don't. I mean, it just. We haven't seen. I mean, Greenbrier and Tour Championship, we haven't seen. You know, he played well at the US Open, obviously, but he was on a heater there, but I need to see. You know, we need to see another win here soon, I feel like. I feel like when he won the Tour Championship, we were thinking this is a guy who's going to win two times a year.
I think he became overrated among like the hipster. He became like the hipster golf choice, you know, as the X-Man. That doesn't mean I don't love him any less. I like the guy. He's not really been a factor though since what, the Florida, the California swing, West Coast swing. Not really.
He was like the dark horse of the class of 2011 because he was in that, but he stayed all right. 4 years. Went to a smaller school. Didn't play a ton of AJGA, and so that's where I think your take. I agree with that, but
Western Am champ.
I mean, you're really like forcing our hand here, saying, I mean, but that's the point of overrated, underrated.
Yeah.
It feels wrong to call him overrated, but I think like he became like kind of the you know, taste soup of the day there for the hipster crowd. But I don't know.
I think about Ryder Cup, and I mean, that's he's got a lot of work to do there to make that team.
Yeah.
I think he's underrated. You know why? Because he didn't even play in the players last year.
It's true.
And now he's back.
Like, neither did Bryson. Think about that. He wasn't even in the playoffs last year. You know, we haven't even hit the stretch where he peaked last year. So we got a lot of golf left. Maybe he doesn't get warmed up maybe until the summer. And he's already notched, you know, a top 10. He's only missed one cut. Underrated.
So is it him or Bryson, low rookie? Bryson,
right? I mean, well, Bryson won. I mean, Xander can finish two, but Bryson's
Bryson's all the way. I'm so on the Bryson train. If I hadn't already picked Bryson in my one and done league, I would be picking Bryson this week.
The thing I hate with overrated underrated is like Xander could win, you know, in 3 weeks, and now he's got 3 wins. And all of a sudden, we're like, oh, how could we ever doubt Xander? What idiots we were!
That's the that's the beauty of it. It's the devil.
That's why I took underrated, so I can look back and say, you guys are idiots.
I still think he's good. I mean, he might not win this year. And we were thinking, you know, this is going to be like an annual occurrence.
Winning is so hard.
It is. And overrated. Overrated winning.
What about Taco Lou? Overrated, underrated?
Amazing. I love it. Now, it definitely doesn't lack publicity, but I'm going to go underrated because I still think 85% of the listeners don't know what it is. But the Taco Royale is, it's amazing. I go there just to get that. I eat three of those.
I've only been there once. I'm not a Jacksonville resident. But I went there once, sat with Luke Guthrie, I think, and DJ Pihowski, Chris Solomon, all friends of the pod. And it was incredibly enjoyable experience and a great meal. So I think it's underrated. But tweets about Taco Lou, extremely overrated. I don't need to hear about Taco Lou.
Yeah.
Like Sean was saying, we don't need to hear about it. Nobody else knows about it other than you tweeted about it. No one's been there. Your followers haven't been there. You don't need to talk about it. So it's a great place. It just doesn't need to be, tweeted about all day.
The problem is social media just overrates everything. Everything becomes overrated because of social media. Because everyone jumps on the bandwagon. They got to make content to prove that they were there, before it got big. And it's just, this is all social media. This wouldn't even be a segment of your podcast if it wasn't for social media.
I'll tell you what, if you take Taco Lou out of Jacksonville and you put it into Chicago, it probably wouldn't be a top 20 taco place. Overrated. Place stinks.
Wow, jeez.
It's hard for me to go ahead.
But that's the thing. If you take it out, put it into a great taco scene, it's not anything special.
And what are you based? How many times have you been there?
Twice.
Oh, okay.
I went to their stand. I don't know if I can really count that.
That doesn't count.
Well, you hear about the stand, nonstop all week.
They have an underrated brunch, I will say that.
All right.
Good.
Brunch might be overrated. I've never had a bad brunch. Does bad brunch exist?
I don't know if I've ever had brunch.
You've never had brunch?
I don't think so.
You've never eaten breakfast at a later time in the day.
I wake up at 5 a.m., so lunch is 11 a.m. At 11 a.m., it's lunch. It's not brunch at that point.
Have you ever had breakfast food for lunch?
I've had breakfast for dinner. Once you have a kid, too, man, you got to eat when they're hungry. So you can't be waiting around until 11 to have your breakfast. They'll lose their minds.
You know, Sean, next time we're in the same city, we're going to go get brunch together.
Shinny? A little Long Island brunch?
Yeah.
Oh, that'd be good. I would love it. That Hamptons brunch crowd would be quite the introduction to the brunch scene for Sean Martin. That's like, playing the tips at, Whistling Straits and you're a 36 handicap, never played golf before. You're just throwing them right into the Hamptons brunch scene. That might be a little intense.
We can't have too many mimosas before I got to write about Bryson's U.S. Open win, though.
All right, guys. We're going to end it on that note. And, all right. Well, have a
Taco
good
Taco Lou. Yeah. Savage. All right.
Yeah, I'm not making friends in the Jacksonville area.
No, not allowed back in Duval County.
All right, guys.
All right.
Have a good week, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, right, Andy.
Later.
Thanks.
You've been listening to the Fried Egg Podcast. We do the digging for you.